Welcome back to The Bookshelf. I'm Caleb Mannin, continuing the reading of my 2015 novel, Bust It Like a Mule, The Tale of Cotton King Fisher. Chapter 34. There are more details after the fire and kissing and crying, of course, and the tale is never done as long as Cotton is busting it like a mule, and he still is and always will be, I wager. There was fire mop-up to be done on the mountain after the fire, and Cotton, though he was dead dog beat, led the crews with Jacob Two Calves and the military back into the char valley of dead ghost charred snags. And they cleaned the mess up themselves, by God, because that is just the kind of man he and Jacob are. The military that came in said that the crew of 50 men that Cotton saved, led by Cotton and Fred Mason, had done the work of a unit 3 times their size. And the men who were there, even Terry Clay, by God, said it was because of Cotton being like 50 men himself, busting it like a mule and running from tree to tree to fell and digging trenches with the Pulaski, all on his own like he was possessed with something, with what the man did not know, but he was possessed like he meant it, and the others followed his lead as well. The best part about it all is after the fire and mop-up and all the fuss, Cotton and J.L. get this. They got by God married man and wife at the Presbyterian Church proper by that sneaky cuss minister, with the police captain's consent being J.L.'s daddy and all, and Cotton asked him proper, I tell you, by God, and of course he said yes, for what could he say to the new town hero, for God's sakes? And Jacob Two Calves and Fred Mason were both best men, of course, and Elsa Mason was J.L.'s maid of honor, of course, and all the men from the fire and the whole town turned out for the wedding. Then there was a damn dance party afterwards at the Grange, and Cotton out danced them all, by God. And J.L. sang him a song under the big sky that the townsfolk say brought tears to old Cotton's eyes, though he does not know how to cry, and Cotton may be angry at me for telling you this, but I ain't saying I saw it, just that I heard it, for it is what the townsfolk said about him getting teared up. J.L. did indeed wear white that day, damn that Terry Clay, for any woman can wear any color she wants on any damn day of the week, especially on her wedding day, and J.L. made the by God dress herself to boot, and it was mighty impressive. Even Cotton said so when they danced under the big sky out back of the Grange after the wedding. This is when Cotton said so about the dress. Some of Jacob's blood family came down from the res to the wedding and did a powwow for Cotton, for they had named Jacob Two Calves Firewalker after his work on the fire, and they gave Cotton the same goddamn name and still call him that to this day, Cotton Kingfisher Firewalker. And they say he and Jacob are brothers from the fire for the marks on their arms and for the work they done together. And this makes Cotton a member of the Blackfeets, and I cannot tell you what this means to him, for there ain't no way to tell about how one lost a family but finds another. These Rez Indians of Jacob's came in some traditional garb like Cotton had wanted to see his whole life. And they did a dance, and it was so beautiful Cotton sat with his wedding dress-wearing, child-bearing switch-hip girl on his lap, drinking beer and watching. And he couldn't say nothing, just watched the dance about old man coming down to save two brothers from a fire. And it was beautiful. Everyone that was there said so. Then even after all this, there is the part of the Cotton tale about how J.L. had a baby boy just the next year, who they named Comanche Two Calves Mason Kingfisher, after Cotton's baby brother, and Two Calves after Cotton's best friend Jacob Two Calves, the Blood Indian, and Mason after his best friend boss Fred Mason. And the last I heard, Cotton is working with Fred Mason at the park all year long. They run it together. And Jacob works there too, and J.L. swaddles the baby in that favorite Cotton Indian blanket that he won from an Indian in a drunken bet, then gave back to the Indian and said, now who's the Indian giver? And then the Indian gave it back to him, for he won it fair and square. This the very same blanket that covered Fred Mason and saved his life from dehydrated burning in the abandoned mines and the glacier burn, swaddles little Comanche Two Calves Mason Kingfisher Firewalker in his beautiful Montana mountain mama's arms, and Cotton is a sweet daddy, I hear, for he can't stand to see children's flesh get story writ upon them like his daddy writ upon him. So I hear he is a gentle daddy, by God. Though he does like to wrestle that baby, for the baby is a boy and a cuss, I hear too, like his daddy. For when he came out of the womb, the lady deliverin' gave him to Cotton, and he kicked Cotton right hard in the goddamn jaw, and Cotton laughed and said, "Attaboy, I guess the apple don't fall too far from the tree now, does it?" And the sometime orchard picker that is Cotton would know it. Cotton takes his little cuss kid down to the Presbyterian church bench on the one end of town and bounces him on his knee, and they watch the many-colored like Joseph's coat his daddy give him train cars coming in. But they don't hop on him no more, and the church minister comes out in front of Cotton, then sits down beside him and the baby on the bench. And they just talk about the earth and old man and life and watch them trains. The state of Montana gave Cotton some medal for saving the town of Stumptown and Glacier Park, and they named the creek before the mine where Cotton saved the men Kingfisher Creek. And J.L. took that medal and the other medals Cotton earned from the war that he hid in his rucksack and didn't tell none about. She took these medals and hung them up in the baby's room, which she painted a nice blue with trees and mountains on the wall. She put the medals where the baby could always see how brave his daddy was to bust it like a mule, though Cotton don't like the idea of bragging about his medals. J.L. says for him to just zip his lip, for she is displaying them no matter. And she does, by God. I hear as well that J.L. is teaching Cotton how to play the guitar proper, for though he says he knows how to play, he don't know the chords at all, and he can't read too well, so he can't play that well without knowing the chords or changes or words, and on that matter, J.L. is teaching him to read well, for a man that can't read is like a man that can't see. And that is why I'm writing this tale about Cotton Kingfisher for you to be able to see. Now I will tell you that this tale of Cotton Kingfisher has been long on my mind, only just now writ, and I wanted to get this train whistle tale down, and I did, by God. I wanted to get it off the flesh of Cotton and down on paper, so when the body is gone, the tale is not, if you get my drift. I have been following the tales of Cotton for quite a few years, and I thought I would never find the man of many stories, but hell I did after this last part I just told you. You may wonder how I came across this train whistle tale of a man myself, and by God, so did I, come to think of it. But it started a while back during the war when I was serving, when I heard of a man and the Uncle Sam's Marines in the Pacific who did the feats of 10 men and more. I heard of this wild man. He had killed more Japs than any Marine. And when the Japs captured him and were leading him back to torture the devil out of him, for even they knew who he was, the ornery American leatherneck cuss, that wild man I heard of was bound about the wrist and neck by the Japs, leading him to torture him. But he pulled a bayonet from a Jap's scabbard and stabbed him, and the rest is all a blur. But this man I heard about, who later turned out to be Cotton Kingfisher, ended up killing over 20 men with but his bare hands and a Jap bayonet is all, though there were guns to be had from those he killed, but he didn't give a damn, he was so ornery. And when they asked him why he didn't use a gun, he said, "I ain't a cheater." And this wild man who was Cotton back then, when he said this, it made his commanding officers feel funny. Not in a good way, deep down in their loins, for they were hard soldiers and had never seen nor heard about the kind of bloodletting Cotton Kingfisher could dish out. Cotton went on to beat the Japs so bad that they surrendered the whole damn island, this is what I heard, that made me wonder for such a cuss and get to looking for him, and it took me quite a few years after the war, but I finally found a trail back to him. A few years after the war, I ended up in Oregon working for the Forest Service, when I heard the same wild man war stories from men that had been in the war with Cotton and had worked with him on the Tillamook burn after, and the head man up in Oregon was in the war with this mule ox man, and said Cotton had saved his life by not only killing those Japs with his bare hands and just a bayonet, but by then going and releasing a bunch of American prisoners behind enemy lines and leading them to safety. And when Cotton was marching them freed prisoners back to friendly lines, a lone Jap came up on them with a rifle and started screaming at them to go on back, But Cotton just said, "Go get in bed with your mama." And that Jap just stood there dumbstruck and watched them all go. But anyhow, this man in Oregon had Cotton work for him at the Forest Service after the war, being that Cotton had saved his ass in the war, and turns out he was right to do this, for on the Tillamook burn, Cotton saved a few others and suffered a terrible burn, and they tried to get him to stay on, but one day he lit out and left a note that said, "Thank ye for your kindness, Cotton K." And when I saw the writing on this note that the man in Oregon kept in his wallet, I knew that it was indeed the man I was looking for since the war, and hell, even before the war. The tales in the war I heard just gave me hope, and the man in Oregon gave me the best truth about the man I had been searching for. And this man I had been searching for, it was Cotton Kingfisher, who I guess you should know by now, by God, is my big brother. For I am Comanche Kingfisher, and Cotton is my big brother, by God. And we thought he was dead like mama, but he ain't, by God. He is alive and well in Montana, and sweet Jesus, thank you, Lord. I am headed to see him to tell him the girls are in California, and they are married and have children, a bunch of peace, and they are happy. I am going to the meaty part of Montana to get on at the Forest Service with my brother Cotton, to bust it like a mule, like our daddy used to say, together like we used to when we was at the pig farm and a bunch of other places, though we were but boys. I am going to Montana to tell him about how I was gone when Fred Mason called the men in Oregon, but the next year I was back in Oregon. And they told me about the whole thing, by God, the glacier burn and all, and I knew of a sudden and headed out to Montana. I just goddamn dropped my Pulaski and ran, and I caught the train whistle tales of Cotton I didn't have already on the way. I know these tales are true, for I caught them from a man who would, by God, know. He was some black and some blue, some black from fire and some blue from beating. And his name was Terry Clay, and he was hopping the rails out west to go make peace with the earth. And he told these tales of Cotton, not angry like Cotton had kicked him out of his town and stole his girl. And I figure Terry Clay already has a head start on making peace with the earth just by the way he told those tales. So I hopped off the rails of Montana just like Cotton did, and I am headed into the meaty part of the Big Sky Country to go see my nephew namesake, and my long-lost brother and his beautiful mountain mama wife, and to work with him for as long as he will have me, for I have missed him so ever since that night he left. And there have been times when I was, by God, sorry I let him leave without me, for I was a coward. I hear from tales that Cotton thinks I am a better man than he, but that is a damn lie. I want y'all to know, for he let out because he had to, or daddy'd have killed him. And after he left, after busting that guitar over Daddy's head, Daddy never hit one of us again, by God. And I don't blame Cotton none, and neither do the girls, and neither did Mama, God rest her soul. She prayed for him every day after he left, and I would serve under that man any day of the week if he and Jacob Two Calves and Fred Mason will have me. And I know they will, for my boss from Oregon, who is in the war with Cotton, called them last week and said they have a good man coming, which is me. And I can't wait to see the look on my Cotton's face when he sees me, for though we are men, and we haven't seen each other since we were boys, we will know each other's faces, for boys that have been through hell together never forget each other's faces, by God. Well, I guess I better get getting while the getting is good, for there is a little Indian boy that just came down to the river to tell me I cannot fish here, which is just what I, by God, wanted. For this boy said he will take me to Indian Father, for that will be my first stop on the way to Cotton and the land where the world began. As much as I hate to part with you, I gotta get to Cotton. So here ends up the tales of Cotton Kingfisher, my brother, though they still go on like the whistle of the train in the wind, which you can hear if you will listen, I tell you. I am off under the big state, big sky, with old man smiling down on us all like a good big daddy, not like mine, Cotton's old man. I am off to make peace with the earth and bust it like a mule. But the best part of all is I don't have to do it alone no more, for I have found my brother, and we will bust it on the line together in the char, smoking, looking up at one another from time to time and just smiling at each other, for life is good. And the earth don't just want us back. It wants us to be at peace before it takes us back. And good big daddy old man comes back and brings the bison with him. And won't that make Cotton happy, for he could use a bison steak right about now. And by God, so could I. The end. That's all. You've been hearing my novel, Busted Like a Mule. I'm Caleb Mannon, and have a heap of help from Mike Ailman and Vern Windham, who recorded and edited it. It is a production of Spokane Public Radio for The Bookshelf. Busted Like a Mule is available on Amazon and Kindle. It is also at some libraries as well as major booksellers, including Auntie's, of course. Oh, and the author's front porch. For original music and more about the book, visit CalebMannon.com. If you've missed any of the episodes, head over to kpbx.org to hear the podcast. I've gotten a lot of rave rejections for my novel Busted Like a Mule. Hell, I even put them on the back of the book. Even Vern was a little skeptical at first. If it hadn't have been for the legendary Nancy Roth, I don't know if you'd be hearing this right now. So thanks, Nancy.